Welcome to Sports Beat KC, the Kansas City Star Sports Podcast. I'm Blair Kirkhoff. The Kansas City Chiefs are no longer on the clock. The seven-member draft class is in the fold, and they'll be part of the team's rookie minicamp this weekend. Chiefs beat writer Jesse Newell breaks down the class as a whole and individually. We discuss how the newcomers will fit in, and do the Chiefs fill all their needs with this class? Okay, let's get started talking Chiefs draft with Jesse Newell. Jesse, this podcast can begin in only one place, and that is your accuracy on the mock drafts.
Yeah, picking first-round picks, then up in the second round. Real accurate, yeah.
You got the names. You're not responsible for any of the trades, but you got the names. You nailed the Chiefs' first two draft picks. I was pretty impressed with that. Total, three players I correctly identified among the 28 that we had in our four mock drafts. Because I think in one of them I had Wiley, the tight end.
You got him.
TCU.
Hey, listen, that's big time. I mean, there's a lot of players out there. This is even what we joked last week about putting the roulette pieces on the board to cover all the numbers. You know, figuring out what person that they get, it's not easy.
Well, in the case of doing, you know, both of our mock drafts, we each did two. You're not only trying to pick the player, but guess the position of need for the Chiefs as well. And I think in all, correct me if I'm wrong, I guess I could be wrong on this, but in all four of the mock drafts, we went in some order, tackle, wide receiver in the first two picks. So, because I think mine, I had A.D. Mitchell as my other wide receiver and Guyton, the Oklahoma tackle, as the first round pick for the Chiefs. And you obviously had wide receiver and tackles, both of your first two picks.
Yeah, it's a butterfly effect, you know, Blair. I mean, I think even talking with Brett Veach after the first round of the draft, when he talks to us, you know, at 11:30 or midnight, it seems like the Chiefs, if one of those top tackles would have felt him in the first round, that's the direction they wanted to go. And so much of this is a guessing game. You know, we talked about it last week. If you'd asked me right before the draft that morning who the Chiefs are going to take in the first round, I would have guessed a tackle. But some of those guys did not fall to them. You know, like an Amarius Mims, if he would have fallen a few more spots, they probably would have aggressively tried to go up and get him. That's a kid from Washington, obviously. In the mix there is two. But it just didn't work out for the Chiefs. So they end up trading up, getting Xavier Worthy. And addressing those needs in the reverse order, and maybe not knowing that Kingsley would be there in the second round, but you know, now we all get to work on the pronunciation, make sure we get it right when Kingsley is here. So Suamataia, after I think I messed it up previously, will not get messed up again, but Kingsley Suamataia, I think most people are looking at that and saying, how did you get him with the 63rd pick? And really like that value for them. And the Chiefs have lots of reasons to like him to begin with. He's athletic. He's kind of their type that way. And as we heard Brett Veach say on Chiefs social media video about talking to Kingsley, basically saying, hey, Andy Reid, the last 10 picks, was really sweating it out. He wanted to get his BYU guy in here to Kansas City. So a lot to like with him. And I think for the first two rounds, the Chiefs, maybe it didn't play out exactly as they envisioned, or maybe perfect scenario wanted to. But I think they have to be happy with getting those two positions of need filled with those two spots.
Let's stay on Kingsley here for a moment. And
Kingsley Suamataia?
The thing about the pronunciation is you might as well you pronounce every letter in that last name. There is no silent letter in there.
Polynesian way, pronounce all the vowels. You know what I mean?
I'm surprised. Yeah, there's not a hyphen in there, or or some sort of pause for as there is often in Polynesian names. But yeah, look, I think he's gonna play enough that we all better get to know him better. And Brett Veach did say that there is a position battle between he and Wanye Morris on the left side. It would be somewhat unusual for a drafted tackle to come in and start right away. That hasn't happened with the Chiefs in a long time. It hasn't happened in the Andy Reid era. Not a tackle. Interior lineman have come in and started.
Eric Fisher, the last one?
Technically, that is the Andy Reid era. It's the beginning of the Andy Reid era. He was the last one. They've had, Mitch Morse come in and start, and Creed Humphrey come in and start, Trey Smith. They've had interior guys come in and start, but not a tackle since Eric Fisher. So, so how's that going to play out between Suamataia and Wanyu Morris?
That was perfect, Blair. Good job. So it will be a competition. Ask Brett Veach on the Monday Zoom call, hey, now that the draft is over, are there positions that you want to fill with free agency? And I thought his answer was very interesting there, where he basically said, no, we want to see what these young guys can do. And so the Donovan Smith types, the maybe Jerick McKinnon types, the Mecole Hardman types that we maybe all thought the Chiefs kind of maybe behind the scenes were saying, hey, just wait, maybe there's still an opportunity for you. Brett Veach made it sound like none of that is imminent. So the Chiefs are going to go into training camp, it sounds like, as of right now, without a security blanket, as you're talking about, Blair, and having Wanye Morris and Kingsley Suamataia compete for that job. Like I said last week, I still think this to be true. There's a couple things that work to the Chiefs' benefit here. Well, for one, Patrick Mahomes is so good at avoiding pressure. Like, he avoids sacks really no matter what his offensive line is, unless you're missing four starters in the Super Bowl like they were against Tampa Bay. He's just really good at that. And two, again, I don't want to make this an offensive line sort of bashing fest, but from all the grades and the numbers we can look at, Donovan Smith was not that great a year ago. And that's just the reality of the situation. And we know that right now for the Chiefs, the baseline level of play to get to, it's not like they're having to replace a guy that is at the top of the game, you know, somebody else out right there who's dominating the left tackle. They sort of need a guy that can come in and hold his water until he gets better and better and improves under offensive line coach Andy Heck. So I think as long as you can kind of clear that low barrier, the Chiefs should be okay in that particular spot. And like I said, they sort of have this nice built-in advantage that Patrick Mahomes makes his offensive line look really good, does a great job of sensing pressure. And as we saw in the playoffs, didn't turn it over. He barely turns the ball over even when he does get pressured. So the Chiefs have a nice advantage there with the quarterback that they have, and potentially can get a guy that can go in here and, again, sink or swim. But they're making on one of those guys to definitely swim.
We should note that Wanye did start some games last year. Mm-hmm. Whose injury was it that forced him?
It was Donovan Smith.
Smith's injury. Right. And so Wanye does have experience. I suspect in this competition, Morris will be the first one to run with the ones.
Yeah.
Just because of the experience. So it is interesting. They got who they wanted. We get all these drafted players on Zoom, and he was pretty darn excited about coming to Kansas City.
Yeah, he great personality. And what's crazy too is I asked him, you know, you can see in this bio that some of his bloodlines in the NFL. I said, can you name all your family members that have played in the NFL? And he goes, oh, currently? And so we all laughed because it's like, you know, if any of us got asked, can you name all your NFL family members that have played in the NFL? We'd say, no, now, future, present, you know, past, whatever. But he was like, oh, yeah, my grandfather, my father, and then Penei Sewell, Noah Sewell, Puka Nacua, who, you know, was in the running for Rookie of the Year last year in the NFL. So, yeah, I mean, he's got great bloodlines. He does seem excited to be with the Chiefs, and he talked about, you know, making sure that old Patty Mahomes would know that he wasn't going to get touched. He called him Patty a few times with that. So he seemed excited to get there. And he also said that meeting with Andy Reid and the Chiefs coaching staff, it felt like home. He said that a few times during his meeting, his top 30 meeting with the Chiefs. And so seems like a good personality. Seems like he's ready to come in here. But the Chiefs are going to need him to produce right away, because even if he's not starting right away, you would think he's going to be the backup tackle there at both spots. And so, like I said, the Chiefs are sort of banking on their evaluation and their ability to get players better. And they also are banking on Andy Heck, the offensive line coach. And that's probably a good person to be able to put your trust into.
You mentioned some players who doesn't look like they'll be back. We don't know. They're still free agents. One of them is Jerick McKinnon. One thing we do know about Jerick McKinnon is if he returns to the Chiefs, he won't be wearing his usual number one. That has already been that belongs to Xavier Worthy, the number one pick. Taken number 28 overall, traded with the Buffalo Bills. So Chiefs were at 32. They traded up to get Xavier Worthy. Why did they think they needed to do that? The cluster of wide receivers that we all just presume going into the draft, Harrison and Neighbors, thank you, and Romaduse, yep, and even Thomas. They were gone by, Thomas was 23, I think. Mm-hmm. So at that point in the draft, I guess, you know, we were thinking tackle or wide receiver for the Chiefs, but wondering if there were better players, at least on the Chiefs board, at which position. They showed us. They liked Xavier Worthy. They went, traded up to get him. The Bills were the trading partner, which is, you know, raised the eyebrows a little bit that it was Buffalo. What did Veach say about Xavier Worthy and why him over the Ladd McConkeys and Leggett and, you know, the other cluster of wide receivers that were available at that point?
Yeah, well, I mean, they just keep talking about his speed. And what's interesting is I did that draft article 3 weeks ago about, do the Chiefs have a type? Does Brett Veach have a type? You know, if you look at measurables of certain positions, do they favor towards one particular thing? And in that article, what the Chiefs favored was 10-yard split time, and what they didn't care about was height. And, I mean, this is Xavier Worthy, right? I mean,
it's the definition of Xavier Worthy.
I mean, he's the fastest 10-yard split time. He's the fastest 40-yard time in history. And he doesn't have any height. You know, he's a smaller guy. I know there were some comparisons Andy Reid had to DeSean Jackson and this sort of thing. But why did the Chiefs trade up? So what's fascinating to me about this, it almost feels, again, you'd have to be in the draft room with the Chiefs. They do so well. I compliment them all the time the whole rest of the year, but they don't pigeonhole themselves into a certain thing. You know, they leave their options open. They're flexible. They don't panic, all these sorts of things. And then these draft moves come up. And like you said, Blair, it seems like there's some PTSD there from some sort of draft experience earlier where somebody jumped in front of them or somebody took the previous player that they had, and they will not wait on their guy. And what's fascinating is that I was looking up some analysis from Kevin Cole, used to be a Pro Football Focus from NFL Draft Analysis. The Chiefs actually, of all the AFC teams, traded away more value of this year's draft than any other AFC team. Mm. Now, they made those two small trades. We see them as small trades. Brett Veach describes them as small trades. But most of the AFC teams don't operate in this way. They hold their water. They just sort of, like you said, they stay true to their board. And if one guy goes, they take the next guy. But I think for the Chiefs, this just made too much sense. And we talked about potentially why, you know, in some of our articles or the mock drafts, which is, this is a guy, a speedster, outside. The Chiefs love their speedy guys. They love to be able to stretch the field. They love to have guys that can move safeties down the field and get defenses moving so they can get the underneath stuff with guys like Travis Kelce and Rashee Rice. And so I think the fit potentially with this offense, what the Chiefs saw, was just better than the other guys out there. Now, again, probably interested in guys like Leggett. You mentioned McConkey and maybe a little bit further down. Keon mm-hmm. Coleman, you know, went to the Bills a little bit later. You know, even A.D. Mitchell, there's obviously been rumors out there that he did not interview well. It seems like that probably had to be the case because most mock drafts had him above Xavier Worthy, and then the Chiefs end up trading up to go get Worthy instead of going for Mitchell. So it seems like there was probably something there in the interview process. But for the Chiefs, again, I think going back to 3 weeks, so they have a type, and they see – I thought Brett Veach said it interesting, and I asked him and followed up on this on Thursday night. Because he said, when there's a guy that you have a vision for, you go ahead and move up and make the move. They have a vision for Xavier Worthy, how he can fit in this offense. Not to mention the punt returning as well. He's going to start as the starting punt returner. Obviously, Dave Tobel will enjoy having that, at least for the time being, until potentially he emerges into a bigger role. But they saw something in Worthy and saw that in their offense. Maybe a little bit like Rashee Rice last year, that potentially it fits the Chiefs better than other guys out there. And so that's the reason they go up there and make their move. It's interesting because, like I said, for 11 months and 29 days, 28 days, it seems like the Chiefs are really calm, really disciplined, and they allow things to fall to them. For whatever reason, these early rounds of the draft, they make things happen and they make sure they get their guys. And so we'll see if it pays off for them.
It also seems that with the drafting of Xavier Worthy and the acquisition of Hollywood Brown, that they are determined to return to the speed offense of 2018 and 2019 when Tyreek Hill was in his glory with the Chiefs. And, you know, they not only put up points, they put them up in a hurry back then. They were full of big plays and quick strikes, and that has been missing in a big way from this offense the last couple of years, especially last season. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but in terms of, you know, plays of 20 yards or longer and, you know, number of plays run and that sort of thing, nothing like the high scoring teams of 2018 and 2019, which, of course, was the first 2019, the first Super Bowl championship team for Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid.
Let me get a little nerdy with me here.
Sure.
So I wrote this right before the Super Bowl about how Patrick Mahomes reinvented himself. And pretty early in your career to be reinventing yourself.
Yeah.
There's an advanced stat called ADOT, average depth of target. So how far downfield on average is your throw going? Okay. First year in the league, Patrick Mahomes ranked fifth among 32 quarterbacks. Average depth of target, 9.2 yards downfield. Okay. Let me read you every year of his career since then. Second year, 8.4 as a starter. Second year as a starter, 8.4, 7.3, 7.2 this year to win the Super Bowl, 6.5. 6.5 ranks 30th out of 31 NFL quarterbacks. Again, Patrick Mahomes just gives you so much margin for error. He wins with long passes. He wins with short passes. So much of the Chiefs' offense predicated this past year of run after the catch. Throw it short, run after the catch, create opening, create space. Again, this is a credit to Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid. They make this thing work. Matt Nagy, that they can scheme things up and win in different ways. What's your preference, though? I mean, this dude, his first year, threw it 9.2 yards down the field and is almost three yards shorter than that on average. Mm. Nowadays, it's sort of like making him play with a hand tied behind his back, which he still succeeds. He's still good. They still win the Super Bowl. But, like, why not open up all of his skills, which we've seen earlier in his career? And so, again, if I'm Brett Veach or Matt Nagy or Andy Reid and seeing this stat, I'm saying, wait a minute. Why are we making our quarterback do this sort of thing when a deep threat or two deep threats can potentially open this thing up and put part of his game back into his game instead of sort of limiting what he can do? And so I think that plays into this as well. And we know the Chiefs have sort of been liking these speed guys to begin with. But if that element of the game comes back, I think you could see a more productive Mahomes and just more a fully utilized full offense rather than the Chiefs, again, sort of having to really maximize exactly what they did. Mahomes was so good last year with the postseason because he didn't turn over. You know, he didn't take sacks.
Right.
He took almost no negative plays. Your margin for error on that is really thin. You know, that I've heard it described by Bill Connelly, a great college football analyst for ESPN, that big plays are like the three-pointers of college football or football. You know, those are the things that are home runs. You know what I mean? These are the things that get you scoring in a hurry, the chunk plays, and it kind of can shortcut you if your offense is struggling a little bit. The Chiefs had no shortcuts last year. Potentially these guys now, Hollywood Brown, and then the long-term future, Xavier Worthy, allow them a few more shortcuts to be able to run the offense in the way that it was being run when Patrick Mahomes first came to the league.
Well, that's what MVS was supposed to be. Just didn't, you know, I think about the drop against Philly, and they never they never created much separation. They would never the Chiefs didn't score on the type of they didn't have the type of touchdown that we saw Tyreek Hill have against the Bills in the you know, tremendous playoff game, you know, where he took the pass, you know, 20 yard, took a 20 yard pass and turned into a 60 yard touchdown. They didn't have that, and now they have the potential for that.
A couple interesting things. I need to look into this more, Blair, but Xavier Worthy posts on his Instagram him DMing the Chiefs Instagram account before the draft, which, you know, was interesting. But the previous one he had sent message to them was like a little hands heart emoji, kind of like Caitlin Clark.
Yeah.
And if the reporting is accurate, he sent that to them right after MVS dropped his long pass against the Eagles. So something we might need to do a little more investigative research into.
Interesting.
But you talked about that, Blair. I mean, look back to the AFC Championship game. I wrote about this play where MVS makes that big catch downfield and how the Ravens defended that. I mean, they were daring the Chiefs to make that throw.
They were giving it to them.
They were giving the Chiefs that throw. And still, all those things had to happen for the Chiefs to make that throw. One of the best catches you see from Worthy on one of his highlight reels, actually, it's worth rewatching because the throw from Quinn Ewers is not perfect downfield, but he adjusts to it so well. It's sort of like in baseball where you see a guy make a diving catch, but it's because he got a horrible break,
yeah,
or he went back and then he came in. It seemed like with MVS and sometimes McCall Hardman as well, it's like the easier catches were made look more difficult, and then some of the what were difficult catches couldn't be made because the routes weren't good. Xavier's catch on that particular play, I believe it was the game against Alabama, but he takes a great route to the ball and he helps the quarterback. You know what I mean? And so that's something the Chiefs can use. Again, we'll see if it translates. We'll see how this plays up. We'll see if he can add a little bit of weight, which is what he needs to do, all those sorts of things. But to your point, Blair, that bomb pass, I mean, when Andy Reid mentions DeSean Jackson, what do you think of when you think of DeSean Jackson? It's that throw downfield. You launch the ball, he runs under it, he catches it, he goes to the end zone. The Chiefs have been missing that for a couple of years, exactly what you said. MVS did not provide that. He righted huge postseason moments, but if the Chiefs get that part of their offense back, then obviously this could be a very good pick for them, both now and also in the future.
Okay, let's talk about the fourth round picks, the two in the fourth round. Tight end Jared Wiley from TCU went was the 131st overall pick, and then two picks later, Jaden Hicks, the safety from Washington State, both interesting in their own way. Let's talk about Jared Wiley in terms of a Travis Kelce contract extension and raise. That was an interesting piece of news that happened on Monday, the day after, 2 days after the draft had concluded. I don't know if I see Jared Wiley as a future replacement type candidate for Travis Kelce, but I will say this: if you kind of dig deep into Wiley's stats, he's a talented catcher of the ball. Led FBS with eight touchdown receptions a year ago. That's led FBS tight ends, and doesn't drop the ball. I think a stat that I saw was he had one drop in his career. I don't know if that was at Texas and TCU or just at his 2 years at TCU, but one drop and 120 targets. So he's a talented receiver. The Chiefs have been, as long as I've been covering the Chiefs and Kelce's been here, there's been a procession of tight ends, right? I go back to Demetrius Harris, and there've just been several who, just don't measure up in any way. And eventually you see that person's nowhere, I don't see a long future in a Chiefs uniform for that tight end. I'm wondering if I see that though with Jared Wiley, if he is somebody you can see maybe getting a second contract with the Chiefs. We got to see him play. Got to see what he's about. But he's good size, and he can catch the ball.
Yeah, so it's a fascinating one, especially when the Chiefs take him in the fourth round when they did take Irv Smith as a free agent earlier. And so it seems like there'll be competition there. This reminds me a little bit of the offensive line where the Chiefs could potentially be banking on a younger player to come in and replace an older one, and potentially, there's room there to be okay this year, but then kind of develop up. And it doesn't seem like Blake Bell's going to be back with the Chiefs.
Yeah,
and
so another veteran.
That potential role could go to Wiley in that one. So it seemed like a pretty good spot in the draft to get him based off of values. Again, I'm going to reference Kevin Colligan. He's done some really good research on tight ends and what makes the most successful ones over time. And the two things is be fast, which is a fast 10-yard split time, and then break tackles. Those are what make the most successful ones. And Travis Kelce ranks well on that. George Kittle, Sam Laporta. I mean, all these guys kind of in the upper corner. That's why I talked about Ben Sennett earlier from K-State. He ranked really high, and obviously he went up higher. I think they saw the Kevin Cole series because
he was the second tight end taken after Brock Bowers.
Traded up and went a lot higher than people thought, because I think potentially this is what people are looking at. Wiley does not measure well on either one of those, just to be clear. This is a different type of tight end. To me, I'm almost envisioning, like, if he can block some, which is sort of what they asked Blake Bell to do, this is sort of potentially what they wanted Jody Fortson to be. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's a big body. He's a red zone target. The Chiefs don't normally throw those contested passes up for Patrick Mahomes in the red zone. But you talked about, I hear the Kelce replacement. And listen, Noah Gray was a fifth round pick. Travis Kelce, the third round pick. Wiley's a fourth round pick. I mean, this is probably closer to Noah Gray than a Hall of Fame tight end. We all can understand that. But to me, that's the sort of thing when we talk about what has Kelce not been as good at his whole career. You know what I mean? Like, if you're comparing him to Gronk, like, what does Gronk have him in spades? It's always been touchdowns. Because you could throw up to Gronk. You know what I mean? Gronk is a big dude. You throw up the jump ball. He catches it. He spikes it. It is the Gronk spike. And that's a touchdown. That, to me, is more what Wiley is. Like you said, he won't drop it. He kind of post up in the red zone there, be able to potentially be a weapon down there. And then you hope you can develop him as a blocker. There's some athleticism there, potentially untapped, but he didn't break a lot of tackles. So we'll see if he can develop that over time. That's usually pretty difficult. But to your point, Blair, too, usually tight ends are guys that develop and mature late. And so we see the Chiefs always go young with players. Actually, look at Wiley. He's old. But I think that's smart for the Chiefs because usually, like I said, the second contracts with tight ends are usually where you get your value rather than the first. So you're taking an older guy, potentially you're kind of getting that sweet spot of the prime years of his football playing career. So it'll be a fascinating one to track. I think this is, again, another Chiefs trying to fill an older roster spot with a younger one and see what they can develop there. But I would put him more as Jody Fortson than anything else. If he can be a red zone weapon and kind of use that size to his advantage and catch balls in the red zone and be that kind of guy they always wanted Fortson to be when he could stay healthy, then that could be a benefit for the Chiefs.
I like that comp. I thought Jody Fortson was had a lot of potential and just couldn't stay healthy.
Yeah.
Could not stay healthy.
And the Chiefs love their 12 and 13 personnel. They love their 2 and 3 tight end sets. So, I mean, Irv Smith or Jared Wiley, whoever's out there, even if you're the third guy, be prepared to play. You're going to be out there 10 or 15 snaps. Andy Reid loves to go to that.
Okay, and Jaden Hicks was we didn't expect the Chiefs to take a safety, certainly not in the fourth round, but they couldn't pass him up. Just an example of they couldn't believe this player who they had rated so highly on their board was available. I don't know who they would have taken or what position would have been taken at that position if Hicks had not been available. But, he was, to some draft analysts, the second best safety on the board, available in the draft. And I don't know how it went, where he was drafted among safeties. But the Chiefs got him in the fourth round and talked about it's been talked about as a steal of the draft.
I've got an interesting one for you, Blair.
All right.
You ready to put the antennas on?
Let's do it.
Okay. Chiefs, second round, traded down. You remember they traded with?
With the
49ers. Or traded up.
Traded up with the 49ers.
Okay.
Switched positions.
Switched picks. Okay. Yep. Switched picks later in the draft. Okay. Chiefs running backs, historically, did you figure they were going to take a running back this draft, first off?
Yes.
I figured they would.
Yes.
They did not. Okay.
Correct.
Typically, I talked about the Chiefs having a type, okay?
You mocked the New Hampshire running back.
I did.
I mocked a running back. I can't remember who I mocked, but
Dylan Lauby, who actually was taken by the Raiders 3 picks ahead of the Chiefs in the 6th round, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's go back to the 4th round, okay? Talk about the Chiefs having a type. Number one player in speed score, which is a combination of height, weight, and 40 time. 7th round pick. In his draft class, Isaiah Pacheco. Chiefs take him. Next year, number one player in speed score.
Was it Rice?
Denarik Prince.
Oh, Denarik
running back.
Prince, the running back who they signed as a
practice squad.
Yeah.
Number one player in speed score this year, Blair. Do you know who it is off the top of your head?
No.
Running backs.
No.
Isaac Garendo from Louisville. Okay. He goes to, in the 4th round, 129th pick overall, to San Francisco 49ers. San Francisco 49ers trade up with the Jets to go above the Chiefs 2 picks to get that player.
Interesting.
Why am I bringing this up? Guess which pick they used to trade up to get Isaac? They used the one they got from the Chiefs. In the 2nd round. Fascinating.
Interesting. That's really interesting.
Here's what we never know about the draft. You know what I mean? Like, I thought the Chiefs would take a running back. It feels like they need a running back. Brett Veach talked on his Monday Zoom about how he likes the guy's talent there, all these sorts of things. It still feels like the one place, like, I'm surprised they didn't address that. But we talked about how potentially they probably like Lauby, a pass-catching guy, maybe replace Jerick McKinnon in the 6th round. Raiders go 3 spots in front of him. 49ers trade up in front of the Chiefs, go get the guy that's usually the Chiefs' type in the 4th round. So all this having said, Jaden Hicks falls to them. Probably too good a value to pass up, like you said. Not usually a premium position at safety. Usually one, a place where you can get guys. But, I mean, the comp is obvious here, guys. I mean, Jaden Hicks is sounds like Shamari Connor.
It does sound like Shamari
Connor. I mean,
that's how he was presented to us from Veach.
Special teams guy, can play different levels, can do different things, can be versatile. I mean, we'll go back even further. I mean, the Chiefs have a history of developing these guys under Spags and him utilizing them the best. Lajarius Sneed, you know, came out as a safety. They're moving to corner. He's obviously becomes, you know, an all-pro type of player. I think this one is a – it doesn't seem like the Chiefs need a safety. You know what I mean? Especially in the fourth round.
Well, but especially with Brian Cook coming back from an injury.
Brian Cook coming back, Shamari Connor. Again, you kind of drafted Shamari Connor's sort of clone. Mm-hmm. This is going to give the Chiefs a strength in that area. I saw somebody out there sort of mentioning that, like, do not run screen passes on the Chiefs if Shamari Connor and Jaden Hicks are out there because they're going to lay the wood. So I remember a few years back we were talking about, hey, the kind of the Tyrann Mathieu years, like the Chiefs just didn't have that physicality. You know, like they didn't hit you. They didn't feel like they brought the punch to you. And now with Justin Reed, with Brian Cook, with Jaden Hicks, with Shamari Connor, I know Lajarius Sneed left, but I mean, this is now a physical bunch. And so you give the Chiefs the benefit of the doubt here because this feels like a player where I bet 20 teams look at Jaden Hicks and say, I like the player. I don't know how he fits. But the Chiefs are one of them where Spags goes, that's my kind of guy. That I took him Shamari Connor last year. We put him all over. We did these things. He helped me win a Super Bowl. That's my kind of guy this year. And so it makes sense for the Chiefs to take him there. It does make me wonder that how many times this happens in the draft. I don't know if it happened with Isaac Garendo from Louisville. I have no idea. But it makes me wonder how many times in the draft that this sort of thing happens where a guy goes a couple picks ahead of you where you thought maybe he's going to fall to you. And all of a sudden, these sort of contingency plans come through. And potentially that's why Jaden Hicks is a Chief.
And as you said earlier, Dave Tobe is going to love Jaden Hicks as well.
Absolutely.
All right, let's stay with the with the secondary before we get to the offensive lineman. Kamal Hayden from Tennessee. What struck me about him, he was the sixth round pick, and what struck me about him is his size. 6'1.5", 192, little bit just, you know, really nice size, 3-year starter at Tennessee. So coming off shoulder surgery, I don't know if he's going to be available during rookie minicamp coming up. But kind of profiles, you know, nicely for the Chiefs.
Yeah, I mean, same thing. I was a little surprised after they took a safety to take another corner. I know they love taking corners, but that room seems really full. But a pretty good value based off of what the consensus boards are. Again, I'm sure the Chiefs sort of looked at what you said, Blair, which is you see the size and you take that and you see what you can mold it into. So, you know, he has quite a backstory if you want to check it out. He was originally committed to Central Michigan. He's from Ypsilanti up there and had some great issues, spent a year at Independence and, you know, has had a brother who, you know, had some legal things happen. And so he's somebody who has been through a lot in his lifetime, if you want to go up and read up on it. But the Chiefs taking a chance on a late round flyer. And again, they love, we know Spags. If we know anything about Spags, he loves the size in the secondary. And so we'll see what he can do and what he can contribute. But that's a crowded house there. A lot of dudes, Jalen Watson, Joshua Williams, Nazi Johnson, Nick Jones. Yeah. I mean, there's going to be a lot of competition there. And so the Chiefs have a lot of flexibility, even with losing Lajarius Sneed. And it makes you realize and fully understand why potentially they did want to go ahead and pull off that offer for Sneed and get that cap room back, because they still have a lot of available players there that they got to feel good about going into next season.
And then in the fifth round, the Chiefs took Hunter Norzad from Penn State, offensive lineman. And then in the seventh round, C.J. Hansen, another offensive lineman from Holy Cross. So two offensive linemen. I don't know if I expected him to go to interior offensive lineman after, you know, taking Kingsley, the tackle, in the second round. So three of their seven picks were devoted to the offensive line. And I guess going into the draft, I didn't see that as an emphasis, and yet, except for the tackle, and yet, you know, here they are. Look, Nick Allegretti was a mm-hmm. valuable player for the Chiefs and ended up starting the AFC title game and the Super Bowl because of the Joe Tooney injury. So, you know, very what a luxury for the Chiefs to have an interior offensive lineman that good they could plug in and win big games with. You know, I think in both cases, Brett Veach brought up Allegretti when we asked about drafting Norzad and Hansen. What I like about both of these guys is they're from the same part of the country. Norstad from Penn State actually spent his first, was it four seasons at Cornell in the Ivy League, and Hansen played at Holy Cross. Are the Chiefs actually looking maybe a year or two ahead with either one of these guys when it comes to maybe we're seeing a replacement here, a future replacement of a Creed Humphrey, of a Joe Tooney, you know, of a Trey Smith?
Yeah, I was thinking about what you were saying here, Blair. It reminds me, in poker we have a term that's called a free roll. It's where me and you both have the same hand, so we're going to split the pot, but I also have like a flush draw. So if I hit my card on the end, I take the whole thing. So I'm already in a good spot, but I have a potential to do even better. And that's what Norzad seems like to me. Alec Gray replacement seems natural for him. You know, center guard flexibility, have that depth behind there. It seemed like the Chiefs were kind of leaving that spot open for a draft pick. And so that makes a lot of sense. We say that, though, and, I mean, Trey Smith was a six-round draft pick, and he started from day one. Now, I don't think the Norzad is being brought in to start from day one, but to your point, the Chiefs have decisions to make this offseason when it comes to extensions. And the three logical extension guys are Creed Humphrey, Trey Smith, and Nick Bolton. Where does Trey Smith fall in that? I mean, you can't pay everybody. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so this to me is sort of that free roll you're talking about. For this year, if nothing changes, Norzad is probably your Allegretti. And again, you hope he develops into that. If he develops into something more, then you're looking, okay, yeah, Joe Tooney or Trey Smith, or potentially, I asked Brett Veach about this at the Combine. I said, Creed Humphrey, probably part of your future. Do you see him as a center or a guard? And he said both. So we saw the snapping issues from Creed Humphrey late in the season. It's kind of gone up and down, up and down. Obviously, he'll be working on it. But if those things just do not solve themselves, maybe Norzad is a center and you bump Creed Humphrey to guard. Either way, you keep him in your program and obviously have him be a productive player, as he showed in that Chargers game, the last game of the season when the Chiefs didn't have anything to play for, where he was moving up and down the line, playing guard, center, wherever they needed him to. So I would assume this offseason that Creed Humphrey is going to be the priority for the Chiefs out of the money that they have. Mm-hmm. And so, again, Norzad makes sense to sort of – it gives you a nice floor of a of the new Allegretti type. I mean, maybe not that good. Allegretti's a really good player, going to start next year. Obviously got his free agent contract, but that type of player. And then if there is something more there, then all of a sudden you have options for some of these tough financial decisions that are coming down the line. Real quick with CJ, the seventh round pick, Brett Veach just said that we've heard this a lot, but kind of too good a value to pass up. They loved what he did at the East-West Shrine game. They always heavily scout that sort of thing. And he's a guy that really played well there. And the Chiefs expect those guys to go normally in the sixth round. And at the seventh, he was still there. And it's kind of strategic at that point, because there are some guys you figure aren't going to get drafted and you can sign them. And there are some guys you have to draft because you know that you're not going to get a chance at that. I remember Brett Veach talking about that with Jalen Watson, the seventh round a couple of years ago. They were not going to be able to sign him because he was going to have so many other suitors. So they drafted him and they took him and they got him. And obviously he's been a big contributor. So I'm sure that's what they're hoping with CJ, is just that they nabbed a guy they wouldn't be able to get otherwise. And maybe a late riser here that other people paid attention to, but for whatever reason was still able to slip through the seventh round.
A fun fact on Hansen, he played at Holy Cross, played five seasons. He was on the team for five seasons, and they won the conference championship every year, the Patriot League. He probably participated in more wins as a college player than anybody in this draft class, which is kind of amazing. So, all right, we've got the rookie minicamp coming up this weekend. It actually starts, I think it's Saturday. Is it Saturday, Sunday?
Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Yes.
So we will be reporting on newcomers with the Chiefs, not just the drafted players, but, in fact, more undrafted players than drafted players will be out there. It's always a fun time. We get to see a lot of – it's a first look at the rookies. We'll get to see Xavier Worthy's speed, and we'll get to know the rookie class a little bit better this weekend. And like I said, we'll get some eyes on some undrafted free agents, some invited undrafted free agents, and then always some good local stories as well. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, you never know. It doesn't happen every single year, but last year, a rookie tryout guy, Echo Boydo, from K-State, local kid, from Lawrence.
Yeah.
Spags gets eyes on him and loves him. And he's a guy that makes the team, is on the practice squad, part of the Chiefs. That's another guy we should throw into the cornerback battle.
That's right.
When it comes, because again, Spags just loves the kid and what he's able to do. And so, again, those stories don't happen often, but sometimes they do. And especially for local kids, when they're able to not only kind of realize a dream, but be able to get out there and show what they can do and open some eyes and get themselves on a roster. Those are kind of the fun stories to follow.
All right, Jesse, we'll see you this weekend. That will do it for this episode. Thanks to producer Monty Davis for putting together the show, and to our SportsBeat KC staff of Randy Mason, Jeff Rosen, and Scott Chasen. And a big thanks to Jesse Newell for sharing his insights. Thanks for listening, and please give us some feedback with a review and a rating. We'll be back soon with another SportsBeat KC, where we talk sports in and around Kansas City.